First, I wanted to dedicate the shiur this morning for the memory of a woman who passed away last night. She was from my old shul in Allentown, and Bella Ziva Bas Mendel. Our topic is Onah, the overview, week two. And week two of two, Rabbi Zirin, God willing, will be starting off his shiur next Friday. Last week, we started out with an introduction of what Onah is, based on the psukim in Parshas Behar, where the Torah talks about returning the land to its original owner in the Yovel year, and then says, by the way, when you sell or buy land, you have to account for the fact that the land is going back to the original owner in Yovel, and sell or buy based on the number of years of produce that will actually be gleaned from it. We talked a little bit about the mitzvah, the threshold of Onah of 1/6, right? The rule that is laid out, that if the Onah, either the undercharging, right, either the underpaying or the overcharging, is less than 1/6, and we talked about 1/6 equals 1/5, then the rule is to simply batel. We don't worry about that overage or underpaying. If it's at 1/6, then it's supposed to be refunded. If it's more than 1/6, then the sale is void at the discretion of the person who was cheated. They get to decide that it's void. It isn't automatically void. It's their decision. So we pointed out two debates between Rav and Shmuel as to issues of Onah. One debate was the debate about at what stage we refund Onah. How do we calculate the 1/6? I'm not going into the ins and outs of what they debated, but the debate was how do you calculate? It's 1/6 of what? That was one question. And then we had a separate machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, which we're going to have to come back to a lot, actually, today, which is the issue of waiving Onah. And the question of, what if I buy something and I say, even if there is Onah, I'm good with that. Is that actually a binding waiver so that later on I'm not able to come back and claim the Onah? So we noted those two machlokos, those two debates. We also had a third Gemara that we looked into, but those are the core two pieces that we had to see. And that led us to our question of what is the source for the obligation to return 1/6? When it's 1/6, why am I obligated to return it? We noted that the Pesukim and Parshas Behar say nothing about 1/6, and say nothing about refunding it. We don't know anything about that. So Ramban offered us two possibilities. He distinguished between the Isser and paying back the 1/6. It is entirely possible for you to be in violation of the Isur Onah, in violation of the prohibition, and not have to pay the 1/6. They're actually two different things. And within that, he said, it could be that it's Gzeras HaKasuv. It could be the Pasuk is somehow telling me to return the 1/6 separate from the prohibition. How you get it from the Pasuk is a really good question. I think Rabbi Zirin is going to revisit that in Shir next week. The second possibility is it's a Derabanan. That's separate from, but again, separate from the Isser. And I'm not going to go through all the ins and outs of the Ramban now. That was last week's Shir. And then at the end of Shir last week, we started on the Pnei Yoshua's point of view. And the Pnei Yoshua, which is what I'm going to pick up with now, offers us another approach. He says that it's actually a function of the laws of theft. Why do I have to return 1/6? Because I have a mitzvah when it comes to theft. If I steal from somebody, Beheshev es hagzela, I have to refund that which I stole. So too here, if I have 1/6 that I don't have a right to, I am obligated to return it. And we noted that that language is already seen in the Tur, Choshen Mishpat Reish Chav Zayin, which we read last time. It's quoted in the Aruch HaShulchan as well. And we noted that it's not clear whether the Tur means it is called theft, like this is just another category of theft, or whether it just means it's like theft. And we had the Reuch Chaim that we saw as well at the end, who seemed to say the same thing, that lo sonu, when the Torah says don't do this, that makes Onah into a form of gezel. There is debate as to how we should read the Rambam in this regard, in terms of whether the Rambam supports this idea that it's mitam gezel, that it's a function of theft. Pesach, let's see right here. The Pnei Yoshua says that the Rambam took this approach, because the Rambam says, if you take a look at source Aleph now on the sheet that I sent out yesterday, I'm just sticking with that one, even though that happens to appear on the sheet from last time, and I'm sticking with the sheet that I sent out yesterday. So source Aleph, V'afal pishu over belosta say, ein aloke, even though he's violating an iser, nonetheless, there are no malkos, mibnation itan lehi shavon, because it could be paid back. Because it could be restored. So the Pnei Yoshua says, hey, that's just just like the laws of Gezel. That's just like the laws of theft. There are no malchus when it comes to the laws of theft, because again, it's a lav hanita klaasei. Well, I shouldn't say again, right? He's making an assumption. Take a look at the next source. Take a look at Beis. The Rambam in Hilchos Gezeila va'Aveda, the very beginning of the laws of Gezeila, he writes, Ve'ein lokin alav zeh, no malchus for Gezeila, sharei hakasav nitzko la'aseh. Because the pasuk cut off below ta'aseh with the aseh. Meaning, yes, I have a prohibition, don't steal. Having now stolen, I now have a mitzvah, a heshiva sakzela, return the theft. So instead of the Torah telling me, don't steal, and now if you steal, you have violated the Isser, and now what normally happens to people who violate Isserim is going to happen to you, the Torah says instead, you violated the Isser, now go do this. What it's done is it has short-circuited the flowchart. Right? The flowchart normally is prohibition, violate prohibition, malchus. Maybe karban, maybe kares, maybe whatever it is that comes out of there. Nitzak la'aseh means that we've introduced a new line in the flowchart, taking us away from all those normal things, saying this is what you do. Go do the mitzvah la'aseh. So there are no malchus. What you do instead is you repay the money. That's the concept of nitzak la'aseh. As the Rambam quotes from the Torah, Shem Gaza Chayv La'asir Shnemar Beheshi V'Sakzeh La'asher Gazal Zo Mitzvahs Aseh. Va'afilu sarav ha'gzela, and even if he burned the gzela, ain't aloka, no malchus, sharei hu chayav l'shalem damah, because he has to pay back the money. In other words, let's say what I stole was not cash. I stole somebody's marmakamos. I stole somebody's desk. I stole whatever it was. And then I destroyed it. So now I can't return the item anymore. So he says, okay, but you're not off the hook. That didn't end. It just means that you have to figure out what it was worth, and you have to pay back what it was worth. That's your obligation. And any time you have a prohibition which allows for compensation, there are no malchus. There are no lashes. Do you see a difference between the way the Rambam framed what's going on regarding Ona'ah and the way the Rambam framed what's going on regarding Gezeila?
This is Nitzaglasei.
Right. The Rambam used different words. Right? Nitam lehi shavon was his language regarding Ona'ah. That it's meant for being paid back, or you can pay it back, as opposed to theft, where it said, nitko la'aseh, it was cut off by the aseh. And the proof that it's different is that where you can't fulfill the heshivas hagzela directly, you can't return the actual object, he stopped calling it nitak la'aseh, and he went back to the language of nitko la'tashlumin. This isn't the same thing as fulfilling the heshivas hagzela necessarily. More proof to that point, look at source Gimel. In Hilchos Geneva, right? Remember that Geneva and Gezela are two different things. Geneva is a sneak thief, a burglar. The Gezela is where you walk up to the guy and you punch him in the face and you take his money, or maybe you just demand it and he gives it to you. So the Rambam writes, Ve'in lokin alav zeh, there are no malchus for Geneva, sharei nitan l'tashlumen. Because it is for repayment, because the Torah does expect him to pay it back. The point is that the Yeshua made the assumption that the Rambam is saying that there are no malchus for Gezela, there are no malchus for Onah, they're really the same thing. However, the Kutras HaShiurim, Rav Gustman says, not so fast. These are really two different things. The issue of Gezela and the issue of Onah are two different things, as seen in the language regarding Geneva. The way the language is used is used over there. And he says, if you see Rav Chaim on the Rambam in Hilchos Gezela, Perek Tes, the Rav Chaim goes on at length to distinguish between what it means for something to be a lav hanita klaaseh versus a lav hanitam lehishavon. They really are two different things, and they aren't necessarily the same. So if Bnei Yeshua thinks that the Rambam is on his side, why am I paying back the Onah of 1/6? Because I stole. However, the Kundersei Shurim thinks that that's not an accurate read of the Rambam. He also notes that there are other Rishonim who view that this obligation to refund the Onah as different from Gezel. Take, for example, the Tosos I brought you in Dalet. Tosos from Bava Metzia Samachalaf on the Dalet, the beginning of Perek Ezehu Neshech, says, V'im Tomer, you might ask, V'lok me begezel gufe, u'begezel avadim, d'lo asi meribis ve'ona, de'in ona la'avadim. The Tosos there is talking about the Gemara that says, why don't I have a pasuk? We saw this Gemara last time. We have a pasuk. Why do I need a pasuk for gezel and another pasuk for ribis and another pasuk for ona? I can learn them from each other. Right? And we gave different answers for what the differences are between them. So Tosfos there, in the course of this sentence, which you don't even really need to understand, but Tosfos there says there is Malkos for Ona. I didn't bring the best line for it. But Tosfos there does say that there are Malkos for Ona. That's all right. How could Tosfos say that there are Malkos for Ona? It must be that he disagrees with the exemption for Nitan L'Tashlumin. But you can't possibly tell me that Tosfos disagrees with the exemption of Malkos or Balav HaNitak La'aseh. Right? That's an explicit Gemara that nobody disagrees. There is no one who is going to tell you that Balav HaNitak La'aseh gets Malkos. How can Tosfos tell me that there is Malkos for Ona? The answer must be because Ona isn't Lavanita Klase, it's Lavanita L'Tashlumin. And that's why Tosfos can believe it. You could also see the Shita Mekubetzas on Samach Aleph Amad Aleph, who distinguishes between Nita Klase and Nita L'Tashlumin. Yeah?
Everywhere we see Nita L'Tashlumin is referred to as Nita L'Tashlumin, and this one time with the Rambam, he says Nita L'Hishavon.
No, the Rambam doesn't use the phrase Hishavon elsewhere.
Really? I mean, yeah.
Interesting. So that would support the Pnei Yehoshua.
Interesting thing, but that may not be what the Rambam is referring to.
Right. You know, you'll say he Shavon because of Ahishavas Hagzela. It's a good point. It's an interesting point. Yeah. Could be.
And even if you say there's a lot of Nita Klase, it's not a derisive.
It's not a derisive that what?
To return.
The 1/6.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's unless you take the Ramban, that maybe there's a Dere Kabbalah, you know, involved, but he also offers you this Gezeras HaKasev idea.
So
it's
identical?
It seems to be good. I mean, the truth is that almost everyone involved in this says it's a De'oraisa.
The
Hashava of the 1/6. Yeah.
But it's unique to when it's 1/6.
Yes.
Versus Xela, which is irrelevant.
Which is irrelevant. Right. And why it's not at less than a 6, Mechila, whatever, is one of the things
right.
We have to discuss. Right. 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 I'm just writing an episode about the Hishavon point. I think it is interesting that the Rambam uses it. Okay, so that's the Bnei Yehoshua's school of thought, though, is this other way of looking at it. I still want to take you through two more ways to look at it, one longer and one shorter. And the longer one is the Kuntres Sheurim himself, Rav Gustman himself. If anyone is not familiar with Rav Gustman, he was the Rosh Hashiva of Netzach Yisrael. Before that, he was a Talmud of the Mir. He was one of those who escaped through Shanghai. He was a Chavrusa of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. And so, in his Kuntres Sheurim and Bava Metzia, he offers a fourth approach, which is really a remarkable approach. He says you're looking at it backwards. You're assuming that there is a prohibition against Onah, and in the event that you did Onah, then you have to pay it back. He says, no, you're looking at it backwards. You have an obligation to return the money you overcharged or pay the money you underpaid for the value of the item. And as long as you are holding that money, you are violating an Isser of Onah. It's completely reversed the way that I would have taken it. Oh, and now I see what I did. That's why it was the wrong Tosfos. It was the wrong line. It wasn't the wrong line in Tosfos. It was the wrong. Yeah. What I have here in Source Dalet was. That's what happens. You have two adjacent Tosfos in your Marah Makomos. Okay. What you want to see in Source Dalet is what we're going to see now. Tosfos there says, V'im Tomar, V'lok me begezel gufe, u'begezel avadim delo asi me ribis ve'ona, de'ein ona la'avadim. Tosfos takes it as a given that regarding avadim, when we say there is no onah, the Gemara says there is no onah for land, there's no onah for avadim, and so on, it means there's no onah at all. There's no prohibition at all. That's Tosfos' assumption. Right? Remember that last week, Ramban said, even when we say there's no onah for karka, there's an iser, there's just no obligation to repay, because the Rambam split them off. The Ramban, I should say, split them off. Rabbi Yonah as well. Tosfos here is saying that that's not so. When we say there's no onah for avadim, karka, and so on, it means nothing. The law of onah does not apply at all. it sounds like the Isser of Onah and the obligation to refund it go together. So the Kuntres Shiurim explains what this may in fact mean. It means that there is a requirement to return Onah, and therefore there is an Isser of Onah. He points this out as well in another Tosfos, bless you. Dachnim Bezim et Aleph Amar Abaye. Tosfos says that there is no Isser if one intends to return the Onah when it is claimed from him. That's a rule. It's a bizarre rule. We have to discuss it more when we get to Dachnim Beis. But what he says is, if I overcharge somebody, but I have in mind that when he says to me, you know, it wasn't worth that much, I'm going to say, you're right here. Have back the difference. The rule is that I didn't violate Onah. Why in the world does that make sense? So the Kuntres Shiurim's response is, because I'm not withholding the funds. The issue is only if I'm withholding the funds from him that I'm supposed to give him. It sounded so strange to me, this idea. And then I listened to an audio shiur on Onah from Rabbi Yochum Kenigsberg. It's available on YU Torah. And he offers an analogous distinction based on Rosh Shimon Shkab in the Shara Yosher. He records a question which he says is a very popular question. Kenigsberg says that is a popular question. It goes this way. We have a rule, Safek De'oraisa L'chumra, right? You're not sure about maybe I violated biblical prohibition. The rule is we go strictly. However, we have a rule regarding Safek Gezel. If I'm not sure whether the money that I have was stolen from you, do I have to pay it back? No. Hamotzi mechaver l'maraya. If he wants it, he's going to have to prove. But it's a Safek Yisr. There was an Yisr. I'm holding on to your money. Right? Not yours personally. It wasn't yours. But I'm holding on to somebody else's money potentially. Why don't we say Safek D'oraisa L'chumra and I should pay it back? So one possibility is to suggest, there are quite a few ideas that are offered. One idea is to suggest that along the lines of your Benon Machaber Benon Lamakam distinction, if I give him back the money that I think maybe is his, now he's going to have to give it back to me. He doesn't know that it's really his. So we're just going to be handing the money back and forth, and whoever, you know, whoever's holding it on Erev Yom Kippur is out of luck. Well, Erev Rosh Hashanah is out of luck. Erev Yom Kippur, you'll be fine. But he just apologized. But that's the question. Why do I view Safek Gezel as Safek Mamon instead of viewing it as Safek Yisr? So he offers the idea, which I brought you here in Hay. He says, "Ubeir inyan zehu lefini is da'iti al piyak dama klalis." He says, "I have to give you an overall introduction." D'chol dinei hamishpatim shal dinei mamonos ben yishloi ehu einam kederach kol mitzvos haTorah. He says, "The issue of our financial laws between us is not like all the other mitzvos of the Torah." And maybe this is what you meant, Pesach. D'b'chol ha-mitzvos, whom Hashem is here, lanu Torah ba'asei v'lo sa'asei. Usually, something is aser, it's because Hashem said so. Something is mutar, Hashem said, go ahead. Chiyuv kiyum ha-maleinu, hu ho'ikar l'kayim mitzvos Hashem. The reason why we are doing it is to fulfill Hashem's mitzvah. But that's not the way it works in money issues. The kodem shechol aleinu mitzvah Hashem l'shalem aleihashiv sarach sheyukdom aleinu chiyuv mishpati. Before I'm obligated to restore it to somebody, we have to determine that it's really his. If it's not really his, I have no obligation to give it to him under the laws of the Torah. First, you have to figure out what you're talking about, and then you find out what the Torah says to do with it. He says the way to understand the law of theft is don't take that which somebody else rightfully owns. If there is a suffix, you don't know that he rightfully owns it. And therefore the issue of don't take it doesn't apply. That's the argument. I hope people don't actually live this way. It's a fun idea in theory, but if you live this way, you realize that you could end up being a terrible human being. It's a gray area.
You apply this concept to Onah too, because as you mentioned last week, it's very complicated to figure out exactly one sixth of what.
Right.
So until you figure out this mishpat.
But that would be an argument. Yeah, that could be potentially be an argument.
Yes, because I don't know.
Yes.
It's so complicated.
Says the lawyer. But yes. But that's the idea that Ishar Yosher expresses. The Isser of Gezel is contingent upon this item being identified as his. So too, right, Kenigsberg wanted to apply it here, right? The Isser of Onah is only once the 1/6 actually belongs to him and I owe it to him. That was the argument he wanted to bring.
So it obviously makes a lot more sense in Onah than it does in Zeva.
Because?
because as it were, highlights by Zay by Onava, he did it with that.
Right.
Right. He knew what he was doing. Right. He was starting to stare at my commentary. He actually did a sale and got it legitimately.
Right.
To Zayla. Right. So Zayla is intuitive.
Right.
As opposed to Ona, which is only because the Torah.
It's only because the Torah told me to. Okay, I hear that.
Zayla. I mean, there's precedent in the Gemara. It says that if you steal, you're going to Menagana, so you don't pay, you don't, the class doesn't apply, you don't pay Kefal, but you still have to return what you stole from Menagana to Menagana.
Yes.
The Karen, you still have to return.
Yes, yes.
So, the distinction you're right, I'm not sure, you know, to say that establishing that they have rights to it or not, I mean, it's murky.
Well, he has rights to it.
The God has rights.
More rights than I do.
Even I'm saying, even without the Sheen or Koina, anything like that, he has, you took it from him, he has to return it also. Fine,
yeah.
Come at me. But, so it's not so pashut that you say, well, it's only tied to, well, that he has. You can just say he has rights.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now, there's more to say in the Kuntresei Shiurim because he uses this understanding of the obligation to refund it to explain the machlokas between Tosus and Rabbeinu Hananel regarding Onah that has been waived and to explain the Ritva. But looking at my notes, I think that because there are many other things to discuss, I'm going to bypass that that piece of the Kuntresei Shiurim. If we want to discuss it at the end and there's time, I would be glad to do so. But especially because the people who did the Hachana on this did the Hachana last week and re-injecting everybody into Tosfos and Rabbeinu Hananel, it's a little bit cruel. I think I'll hold off on that piece of it. Rabbi Kandisberg also had another way to explain Tosus's linking of Yisro and Hachazara, but I'm going to bypass that also. I did want to get to Rav Asher Weiss. And Rav Asher Weiss has a last view that we're going to see of where Hachazara comes from, suggesting that it's built into the pasuk of Lo Sonu. Right? We have Ramban, who says, Isser is here, obligation to repay is there, an obligation to repay maybe from the Pasuk and maybe a Derabbanan, but they're two different things. We had the Bnei Yeshua who said, the reason why I have to return the 1/6 is because it's like theft. And then we have the Kuntresei Shiurim who says, no, the core obligation, what the Torah is telling you is to repay it, and therefore, having not repaid it, I'm in violation of an Isser. Rav Asher Weiss says it's built into the Torah's prohibition of Lo Sonu, and I brought you two paragraphs from a piece that's available on his website to show this to you. The first one being in source Zion. He says, V'hanira ikar v'hadgashas v'hatamas hadavarim. He says, what appears to be the essence regarding explaining this matter, l'fima asher b'yarti b'makom acher, based on what I said elsewhere, v'davar animser l'chachamim, regarding that which is given to the chachamim to figure out, meaning certain halachos are given to the chachamim to apply, or to determine what the applications are. My favorite example of this, I don't know if the Mechas Asher does this, my favorite example of it in general is Motzah. And discussions in the Aruch HaShulchan about how Muktzah evolved over time, where the Gemara tells us, well, Nehemiah came along and did this, and the Chachamim came along and did that, and how in the world can you repeal what Nehemiah did, and so forth. The Aruch HaShulchan posits this idea that it's something that was given to the Chachamim to do. It comes up in a few different areas, and he's going to apply it here. D'b'chol makom shematzinu din klali ba'Torah o mitzvah klali sha'al karchach yesh bo, or anapta karchach, but yesh bo pratei halacha. Anytime you find an overarching rule in the Torah, or an overarching mitzvah, which then has all sorts of particular applications, nimser hadara l'chachamim l'kba pratei abadiktu kera, it's up to the chachamim to establish the specifics. That doesn't make it a derabbanan. It's a d'oraisa, but they're telling you where the d'oraisa applies. Shades potentially also of the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, Perikid Dalet Halacha Aleph, on V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, where the Rambam tells you about all sorts of mitzvahs that he says are said by the Chachamim, but they're d'oraisa under V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. They're sort of d'rabbanan and they're sort of d'oraisa. Maybe this is also an application of it, I'm not sure. But he says that's what we're talking about. He says the Chachamim with their Ruach HaKodesh, with their great comprehension, they're the ones who figured out where to apply that which is in fact a De'oraisa. V'kach gam besugya zu, which should say zu, not zan, sorry. Dona sha'asra Torah. So too here. Dilo amra Torah im hamekach kayam obatel. V'im tzarech lahachzer ona olo. Uma ben karka umetaltalin, udram sheish ben minyan umishkalu kadoma. The Torah did not give me all of the different rules. The rule of where the sale is binding and you have to refund versus where the whole sale is void. The rule of, or giving back ona or giving back nothing. The rule of applying it to land versus movable items. The rule of overcharging for items that are actually sold by number or by weight, which have a different rule altogether. He says, "Va'karachach nimser adar l'chachamim." The answer has to be that it's up to the chachamim to determine v'divrayim divrei tarahema, and what they say is de'oraisa. Ze'anirabiso dvarim dog v'tishkach. He says that's the foundation of it. Is that in fact the Torah is saying, and the Torah is telling you, this is the rule, and the Rabbanan give you the specifics of that rule, but it's all part of the same rule. Don't do what the Ramban did, making a split. It's all part of the same rule. Take a look at Ches, where I brought you where he gives a broader explanation of it. I brought what he said in this source in Aleph, because there he gave you the overarching view of what he's doing. But here you get the Ona application in a stronger way in source Ches. He says, look at this rule that if it's more than a sixth, the sale is void. Is this a particular law of ona? Ukdin shtus dekano marzer ona, just like at 1/6 you refund the ona. Oshema din klali u de mekach tos, or maybe that's a rule of mekach tos, sales that are done on the basis of a misunderstanding. Ukiyayim benim tzachomet, just like if you sell me wine and it turns out to be vinegar, the sale is void. Vamekadesh isha benim tzabamum, read kiddushin and then there's a problem, something turns out not to have been divulged. Uchadome. But he says, I need to look at this closer. Normally, mekach tos means, I thought I was buying X, and in fact I was buying Y. There was something about the thing which was under transaction, how the... Yeah, that's the basic rule. Aval ba'ona yosem ishtus be'emes ein taos be'etzem ha'mekach o begova hatashlum. But if you paid too much, there was no mistake in terms of the item itself, right? The umas varaye yesh levatlas ha'mekach. Why am I canceling the sale if it's mekach taos? Umistaber yosem ha'yolomash yachzer ona. We should just say, I don't care if it's 1/6. I don't care if it's 1/2. The rule should be, you just refund whatever you paid. That was over it. If this was really mekach tos, if we're erasing the sale because it was like fraud, that doesn't fit the normal parameters of a fraud case. And he says it shouldn't be like where you thought you were getting wine and you got vinegar. Because I have news for you. Buyer beware. Caveat emptor. The lokeach has a responsibility, the buyer has a responsibility to figure out what he's paying for. He said, here, you put out a sticker, the sticker said $100. And I chose to pay you $100. Now I'm going to come back and complain, it was my decision. There was no, he didn't force me to pay him, he didn't force me to come into his store, he didn't take my wallet out of my pocket, it's my fault. It's the mizane who's the victim of his own doing. Anytime you have the ability to investigate something, you can't claim that you were cheated. That's a basic rule. And especially in Ona, because you know what people do when they sell things? They're trying to make a profit. If they're not trying to make a profit, they're very bad in business. I just read an email from someone the other day, a rabbi who wrote in the email, his father-in-law always said to him, as a businessman, you would make a great rabbi. You understand what I'm saying? It was funny in the email. The point is that you can't engage in business without trying to make a profit, so the buyer knows. Yes, they're trying to get as much money as they can for the item. He says, so the fact that at more than a sixth the sale is void is an ona'a rule. It's not a mekach taos rule. Below gedar kali devik lo mekach. V'yisod hadavar, and the fundamental principle is dinimser hadavar lachacham alikva prateva ditukash alach hazu v'hem amru deyosem ishtus batal mekach. The chachamim were the ones who were given this to establish, and they said at 1/6 refund the ona. More than 1/6 the sale is void. Don't compare this to other areas within halacha. This is all integrated within the Torah's instruction of lo sonu oso. That's the way that he views it. Clear? Hopefully. So that's the last one that I wanted to bring. I did note the Shari Yosher in Pass, who tries to tie in the 1/6 into the Psukim. I thank Adam for actually going through it and figuring out what he was saying, but I decided not to do it as part of the Shir. So what we now understand, hopefully, is that the chiyuv of refunding the 1/6 from the Me'anez side is possibly linked to the issur that he performed, possibly a separate thing, possibly it is what generates the issur that exists, or maybe, as Rav Asher White says, it's all part of the issur, and the Chacham are the ones who are giving you the breakdown of the different rules. Even though, once again, as I read the pasuk in the Torah, I will find nothing about refunding at 1/6. So when you get to Parshas Behar, right, and you're looking for a Dvar Torah to say, you now have a ready-made Dvar Torah for Parshas Behar. You can tell, and you can probably break it into three different parts and tell it at all three meals on Shabbos, trying to explain to people how we know that you're refunding at 1/6 when you read it in the Parsha and it didn't look like it said that. This is very good, particularly for a year when Behar and Mechukosei are separate. This year they're together. But otherwise, you're looking for the Sam Behar, now you have a ready-made Dvar Torah. But we have a problem. Because the mitzvah of, or the practice of refunding the 1/6 is not only about the me'ane, it's also about the mit'ane, the person who was cheated. Separate from the isser for the person who did the ona'ah and his obligation to return the 1/6, there is also the mit'ane, the victim's ability to claim the 1/6. Clear? When we began this shiur last week, we said that the isser for the me'ane is linked to the fact that he has committed fraud. Meaning, in the event that he comes up to me and says, and we'll see this in the Gemara in a minute, but in the event that he comes up to me and says, this item that I want to sell you, I'm charging you $200. However, you should know the real value is $100, and I'm selling it to you knowing that you know that. I can't claim that he cheated me. He told me exactly what it was worth. Maybe even showed me the blue book. He showed me what exactly, or the red book here in Canada. I may be upset, but I can't claim that I was cheated. The rule of Onah at its core, which we will modify in the next half hour, but the rule of Onah at its core seems to be a rule of fraud. And that's very clear in the structure of the Mishnayos in the fourth Perek. Meaning the opening Mishnah of the Perek dealt with backing out of a deal, and Mishapara, the declaration of the Beis Din or of the person who did it, depending on how you understand how Mishapara is carried out, but the statement that Hashem is going to punish people who back out on their word. Then the Mishnah presents you a law about backing out permissibly. In the event that there was Onah, then you are allowed to back out, and it is permissible. And then it moves into identifying cases and rules of Onah, with a little tangent into Pruta and Chomesh. And then it talks about Onah as Devarim, which may apply, onas devarim, which we usually render as verbal abuse, which may apply in cases of commercial onah as well. We'll get back to that at the end. And then Ramos, the issue of tricking people in inappropriate business competition. So it fits as a statement about fraud, and that's the way it's presented. That's why it's presented in context in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, building on the way it's presented in the Gemara. There's another way we know that Onah is about fraud and not about just overcharging, because there's a separate Isser Dirabanan against overcharging. Right? If Onah were really about all cases of overcharging, right, and underpaying, but we'll leave that out for right now. But if Onah was really about overcharging, then I wouldn't need the Gemara in Bava Basra, which you saw, hopefully it's in Source Yud, which tells you about prohibitions against hoarding things as well as overcharging for necessities. Now, Onah is not limited to necessities. Onah is an Isser on all items. Why would I need a separate Isser Dirabanan against overcharging people for necessities if I already had an Isser Onah that applies to everything? The answer is the Isser of Onah is not about overcharging. The Isser of Onah is about fooling people into paying more.
If Onah is based on fraud, isn't that the opposite of what the Bishop of Weiss was saying? He says, you can find Mechaptaus is fraud.
Right.
And then he says, it's not fraud because Misana has a duty to check and everything.
Well, that's his argument against saying, what Rav Asher Weiss is saying, I think, is that there's an argument against saying you were cheated if you're going to call it Mechaptaus. And in fact, Mechaptaus would not apply. And what the Torah is saying is, you can't claim that he should have known better, and we're going to call this onah.
No, but you'll explain mekachtos as being fraud.
Mekachtos is not necessarily fraud. Mekachtos is where there was a misunderstanding also. In other words, you're the seller, I'm the buyer. Okay?
Not necessarily.
Yeah. You said, this is a barrel of vinegar. I didn't hear right. I thought you said wine. I can still come back and demand a refund. So yeah, it's not, mekachtos doesn't have intent.
Are you saying that there's a separate issue of fraud, separate from the possible issue of jewa that onah falls under as well?
Correct.
Okay, fine. So then how does fraud explain why there's no onah by karka?
In other words, so if it's really an issue of you cheating, right? And the answer seems to be that the Torah is not concerned about the fraud potential regarding land, which, when they discuss why it doesn't apply by land, there are various explanations that are offered, such as when it comes to land, people are willing to overpay, or it's harder to evaluate the proper value. I think Rabbi Ziering has this as part of his shiur next week. We were discussing about that. Yeah. He thinks so. But the exemption from it for land isn't because you were a bad person when it came to these items, but you're a good person when it comes to this. But we are going to provide certain explanations for why it will be less relevant regarding right. Well, that's the whole problem with Ramban races, right?
That's all he
does
as well.
Right.
It's driving the prices up such that the legitimate price.
Correct. Right. That's why I didn't want to sit on the hoarding case so much, but the general issue.
The Rabbanans are also about shifting the actual price, which is
correct.
Clearly not enough, because right then you're just manipulating what the real price will be.
Right. Right. It's true. It's better to say price manipulation than overcharging, because you may not be if you take overcharging in its most literal sense, that means you charge more than you should, but in fact, maybe you just manipulate the price, so that is what you should charge.
That's part of the fundamental difference between onah and hakacharim. Hakacharim is making its legitimate prices more, and onah is, right?
But hakacharim is not limited to that. It will apply also where I go over the base price. It isn't limited to...
The Ocho is clear.
Yes. Adam, what?
There's still a danger of charging more than a sixth, just in general.
Correct. Correct. And the Rishonim say this as well. I mean, this isn't my invention that this is about fraud. The Sefer HaChinuch, we saw it last week in the very beginning, in Shin Lamed Zayin, said it explicitly. The Shoresh HaMitzvah, he said, is because it's not right for people to cheat other people. He took it as a given that this is about cheating people. And the Sma says it as well. The Marshal, in his comments to the Torah in Shin Lamed Zayin, is quoted in the Sma, Reish HaZayin and Aleph. I brought it for you on the sheet. Take a look at source Yud Aleph, in which he says, and this is what I mentioned before about Onas Devarim, he says, Vida, the Marshal Zal, Chidusha Blatur, Kasav Da'af the Isme'itu Hani. I added in those words in the parentheses. Midin Onah. Marshal said, even though these items, meanings, the Eved, the documents, land, whatever, are excluded from Midin Onah, Mikomokom Logari Me Onoas Devarim Ugnevas Das. They have not been removed from Onoas Devarim, which we take as verbal abuse, but I take as using your strength against somebody else verbally, in this case, your position of power, that you have the item and you're setting the price. Ugnevas das, as well as cheating other people. Ubichlal lo sonu ish es achiv hein. And they're absolutely included in the Isser of lo sonu. Don't do it. Ugmoshis bar, reish vish, simin reish chachas. In lo shamocher ba'atzmo lo yada me ona asam. Unless you, the seller, don't realize you're overcharging. Because if you don't realize, then you're not guilty of these things. But the point is, it is clearly understood to be a fraud issue. There was, as we discussed, the Rambam on the Gimel Lavin by the Ger, but I don't want to get sidetracked into it right now. That's why I'm not bringing it. There's also a sefer I found online called the Yishrei Lev, Rav Arye Lev Baron, who was also one of the Plate Emir, who ended up in Montreal and was a Rosh Yeshiva there. He passed away about 5 years ago. So he has more on the relationship between Onoas Mamon and Onoas Devarim, for those who are interested in seeing it. You can find it, of course, in Hebrew books. It's the Yishrei Lev Chav Ches Chav Ches. Okay, so there is this understanding then that you can claim the 1/6 because this guy cheated you. However, there's another piece of this. Even though the Ma'aneh has sinned, right? This person who is guilty of Onah has sinned, the Mis'aneh, the victim, is allowed to forego his right to 1/6. And that will eliminate the Ma'aneh's obligation to pay it back. The Mit'aneh can say, I don't care. The most obvious demonstrations of this are found in our Gemara. First of all, the opening Mishnah of our discussion, right, from Daf Mem Pes, said, how long are you able to claim Ona'ah? Until you show it to a merchant. Why only until you show it to a merchant? Because at that point you know the real value. I mean, the truth is, there's another way to read it, but one way to read it is because by that time you had the chance to know the real value and you didn't claim anything from him, so therefore you can't claim it any further. You were mochel, essentially. The other way to look at it is that it's simply a statute of limitations, because otherwise people can't live. Meaning, if every time I sell someone something, I have to worry that 5 years from now he's going to come back to me and say, actually, it was an overcharge. You know, and I have to keep my records and proof of what it was worth at the time and everything else. It'll be a bookkeeping nightmare. So you could read it that way. You don't have to read it as mechila. But that's one proof. Another proof, perhaps a better one, is Nunalef Amaralef, the story of the Varshechi. If you take a look at Source Yud Beis, Hahu Gavra Davanakid Varshechi from Bav Metzia Nunalef Amaralef. There was a fellow who had Varshechi, which Rashi says are silks of some kind, Lizavune, which he wanted to sell. Kari Shisa, he set the price at 6, Vishavya Hamisha, but it was only worth 5. Okay, so that is more than a sixth over the what he should be charging. But the truth is, this was the Middle East. Right? It's the Middle East. He said, alright, I'm asking 6. Someone came to him and said, 5.5. He said, deal. You could negotiate. So also Gavra, along comes somebody who's smart. Varmini says to himself the following. If I give him 5.5, that means he overcharged me by just a half. That won't be the level of Ona. And then I'm going to lose the half. Etele Shisa, I'm going to pay him the full price. I'm going to pay him 6. Then pay Ladina. And then I'm going to haul him into court and say, you overcharged me or not. And that way I'll knock it down, right? Because he'll give me the extra 1 or whatever it is. And that way I win. Aslakam made the Rava. Now, we have to know about this case is that the person who was doing the selling was not a merchant. He was a balabas. He had some silks, but he wasn't a professional salesman. This way, he wasn't a peddler. This wasn't his business. So Asa came to Rava. The guy comes to Rava to claim the Ona. Amar Le, Rava says to him, Lo shanu ela belokeach min hatagar. Ava belokeach mi balabayis ein lo ala vona. Rava says, the only time that you're able to claim Ona is if you buy from a merchant. If you buy from Joe Balabas, some guy selling this out of his house, and I don't mean a Toronto basement shop, right, where they are a salesman, but really, a guy just selling out of his house, then you're not able to claim Ona. That's the statement. That's the idea. So there is no claim of Ona'ah in this story. Now, the reason why I bring this here is because, does the buyer know the true value here?
Well, in Rava's case, he knows.
The buyer here knows the true value. He knows that it's worth 5, right? He's aware that it's worth 5. So keep that in mind in dealing with this case. But take a look now at Rashi in Source Yud Gimel. Rashi explains why you're not able to claim Ona in the case of the Balabas. So he writes, Tachshidin uklei tashmer shalo chaviv and olav. When a guy is selling stuff out of his house, he loves this stuff. Veino moch banel biyoker. He's only going to sell it for a high price. V'havalei kemefarish yodei ani sheish ba'ona. It's as though he has said, yeah, I know there's Ona in this. I mean, look, come on, elo olav Ona. And we are going to say in the Gemara that if you say, I know there is Ona, then you can't claim Ona. That's Rashi's explanation. You know you're overpaying and you are mochel. So that's proof that there is a possibility of being mochel. Parenthetically, not everybody agrees with Rashi's explanation of it. The Rimagash, which I brought you in Yudalit, offers a different explanation. He says it's because the stuff the Balabas sells is harder to find. It's not your random stuff that's available on the market. It's special things, and that's why you'd be willing to pay more. But that's not the usual way. The usual way is take it as Rashi says it.
But then it wouldn't be enough. Then it's actually worth more.
Then it's actually worth more, correct. I think maybe that's why we don't take this view of what's going on. Although we have to discuss in the course of our study of Onah how exactly you set the price when there are items that are worth more to you personally or are worth more in particular geographic areas, types of markets, and so forth. That's going to be more complicated.
Well, those are two different things.
What are two different things?
The geography is market.
Yeah, I'm not going there.
Right, you personally, you have
correct.
That's not market.
Correct. The another example of this, and the best case for this, we're going to have to come back to this a little bit more, but is Nanala from Midbeis in Source Tesvav. The Gemara there is dealing with cases in which Onah does or does not apply, and Rava says, in one case Onah applies because it was Stam, in the other case Onah does not apply because he was Mifaresh. What are you talking about? What we're talking about is the following, Disanya, Bamed Dvar Mamurim, Bistam. Where is there Onah? In a Stam case. Stam meaning you didn't say something. Something was not explained explicitly. Avol ben mefaresh, but in a case where it was explained, and here we go, mocher sha'amar lelokeach, the seller said to the buyer, chiv vetzash ani mocher lach b'masayim, this thing for which I am charging you, 200. Yodei ani bav sheino shava elamana. I know that it's really only worth 100, and then he added a key clause. Amenas she'enucha alay onah, and I am selling it to you on condition that you can't claim onah from me. Ain lo alav onah. The rule is, there's no onah. If number one, the knowledge was there, and number two, I agreed to the condition. That's mefaresh. It was all above board. So I'm mochel. Elisha.
I have no idea what was covered in show last week. But
okay.
What about all of the problems with Almanach she'enucha alay onah?
You mean?
Like, that maybe it's a...
You mean Matzah Shemash, Kasba Torah, and so on?
Yeah, like it's...
Right, so I'm skipping those for now, because when we get to Mimat and Nunalev, to actually see the Gemara inside, we'll have to deal with the ins and outs of it. Right now, I'm eliding that whole discussion, because it won't affect this. But yes, you have to have the discussion about Ein Lecha alay onah versus Ein Bo onah, and so forth. The same deal if it's an underpaying case. I say to him, I'm buying this for 100, I know it's worth 200, but I'm buying it from you on condition that you can't claim onah against me. There's no claim. In other words, mechila can happen.
Does that only work though if we say it's all fraud based?
That's what I'm saying. It's because there's no fraud.
Right. But what if there's a, if you hold that it's not fraud based, but otherwise
it is fraud based. Yeah.
Why do you need the
word? Sorry. Why do you need the?
The whole concept of fraud is one side knows something that the other side doesn't.
Right. Good. Hang in there. I'm going to answer that question. Pesach asks, then what do you need the almanas part of the sentence? It's not fraud if you tell him it's worth 200 instead of 100. You know, that's the end of the conversation. So the answer is we have to see that. Because my next point is, the misane's right to claim the 1/6 back is not forgiven just because he knew the price was wrong. So long as he didn't know the specific value, I'm taking the view of the Rambam, and this is our last major point of the shiur. The rule is he has to know the specific value, right? Like the Mishnah says, it's in Source Tes Zayin. Kishem shona lehed yod kachona letagar. The Tanakama's view is that just like I, who know nothing about business, am allowed to say, "Hey, you cheated me; it wasn't worth it." Even if I were an expert merchant, I would be allowed to make that claim. You'll tell me, but you're an expert. How can you claim that he cheated you? I may be an expert, but I'm standing there in the store. I don't know whether it's worth $1 or $2. I didn't have all the information at my disposal. I can claim, oh no, and that's brought in fact in the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah brings this as well, and Reish Chav Zayin is Zayin, quoting the Mordechai, which I brought you in Source Yud Zayin. The Mordechai quotes the Avi Ezri. He says, the rule is im yada halokach b'shasak ala achar zman. If the buyer knew that there was onah, he didn't say anything. Time went by, but he's still within his statute of limitations. V'tva utva ladin, and then he brings the guy to court. Lo havash dikaso mechila. The fact that he didn't say anything, that's not mechila. You have to have an explicit statement that you are forgiving it. K'dechazina hacha b'tamuda gabei var shechi v'kipi, like the case of the silks that I mentioned, where you buy from the balabas, Because think about it. The case came to Rava. Right? I wanted to say this before, but I had to hold it off until now. Case comes to Rava in the case of the Bar Shechi. Tell me something. In the case of the Bar Shechi, right? That was the clever guy who said, I'll pay him five instead of I'll pay him six instead of paying him the 5.5, right? So he knew what the right price was. So when Rava says to him, you can't claim Onah, why didn't Rava say, you can't claim Onah because you knew what the price was? He said, then you can't claim Onah because you're buying from a balabas. Why did he say to him, you can't claim Onah because you knew what the price was? The answer is, you need an act of Mechila. You need to actually make the statement. You follow? There has to be that level of not, or you have to say that it's because he has to actually know what the specific price was, although he knew what the specific price was. So no, that's what I'd say. You need an actual act of Mechila.
Why can't you assume that it could have been either?
Sorry?
Why can't you assume it could have been both? The problem is you have to say that the fact that he didn't sign the other one must be...
You mean the fact that he could have brought it? Okay. The Mordechai doesn't seem so impressed by that idea, but yeah.
He could have said that, he could also say that, you know, you don't have the right to claim Onah because really it wasn't Onah. You created the Onah by overpaying for it.
Right.
Why do you need the actual act?
So that's where I'm going. I'm going there. I just need one more minute for first. The other case that demonstrates it is the case that we just saw about Mefarish. Right, in which we said he has to say al-manas. It isn't enough that he tells him. Now, parenthetically, I didn't want to make a big deal out of it, but I saw it in my hachana, and therefore I wanted to say it. There is some dispute in that case about what mefarish means. How much do you actually have to tell him? The example the Gemara gave is you tell him what it's actually worth. What if he doesn't say what it's actually worth? What if he just says there is onah? You should know it's worth less than what I am charging you. So Rashi believes, as you see in Source Yuches, Shapirish lo yodeani sheyesh onah. He just has to be mefarish. I know there is onah, and I'm selling it to you on condition that you won't claim it. That's Rashi's approach. The Rambam in Yutes disagrees. He says, Ketzad, I'm in the middle of Source Yutes, Mocher Shama Lokea, Chepet Zeshan, you notice him, but Masai, yodeani sheyesh shava elamana. You actually have to specify the amount, like the Brisa in the Gemara. So how much you have to specify is actually a machlok, as we showed him. Rashi says you just have to say there is onah and ask him to forgive it. The Rambam's view is you have to tell him what it's worth and then ask him to forgive it. The Machane Ephraim has an interesting point on this. The Machane Ephraim in Onah Yudalid, he asks a question. He says, if you're the Rambam and you believe that buying from the Baal, and you believe that you have to actually be mefarish what it's worth, what about the case where you bought from the Baal Abbas? Where he said, if you buy from the balabas, it counts as onah. I'm sorry, there's no claim of onah. If you buy from the balabas, there's no claim of onah. But you didn't know what it was actually worth. Rashi, I understand. Rashi says you don't have to know what it's worth in order to forgive it. But the Rambam says you do have to know what it's worth. Why does that work in the case of the balabas? The Machane Ephraim says something I totally do not understand. I don't understand it, but I found it so fascinating that I wanted to at least mention it. It's in Chaf. He says, I'm going to say it outside, but you can see it there. He says, you are not empowered to claim Onah from a balabas. The Rabbanan came along and said, you can't claim Onah from a balabas. Since you can't claim Onah from a balabas, therefore, you are mochel. You're not mocha because you know there's onah and so forth. You're mocha because the rabbi said you can't claim onah from a balabas. I don't understand that because it sounds entirely circular, but that's the Machane Ephraim statement. He's very clear. It's black and white.
How does he reconcile that with the notion that you stated before that a tagar can claim from the balabas also a balabas?
Because the tagar is the when we say you can claim it from a balabas, that means he's the mohair.
Right, but he's the disaffected one.
Right, but
so why is his status as a tagar?
Because it's specifically items sold by a balabas. It's not items that are bought by a balabas.
It seems that if you're aggrieved by a tagar, all right, then you have one set of rules. If you're aggrieved by the balabas, you have a different set of rules. But the tagar, when he's
aggrieved, we can take this after, but we have 5 minutes to go, so I want to make sure to wrap the point, because the key question is still out there. The again, what we've said in this second part of the shir is that fundamentally the iser for the me'ane is a function of him committing fraud. We show that from the Gemara, we show that from the Rishonim. But then we said that the mis'ane may be mochel. He's able to forgive it. We showed that in the Gemara. We showed though that it's only if he actually does a formal mechile, if he actually forgives it. And now we have to ask the question, why don't we say the mechile took place when he knew there was Onah? Why do you need this al-menas? What's that about? So, bless you. Two approaches. One approach is because his mechila is considered mistaken. As long as he doesn't know the particular amount, it's mechila betos. He's doing it by mistake, and therefore it is void. And that's the position taken by the Rashba. The Rashba which I brought you in Chaf Aleph, not dealing only with an Onah case, but his fundamental rule is, if you don't know how much you are forgiving, that's not mechila. And he says that as a general rule, but he uses our Gemara as the basis for it. The discussion about Sasam and Nefari Shan Nun Aleph, and the Ketzos HaChoshen says it as well in Reish Chav Zayin Tes. You can see it as one liner in Chav Beis. Gabe Onam Mishum Delo Yada De Machal. Ava Gav De Machal Havali Mechile Betaos. If he doesn't know what he is being Mochel, the fact that he is Mochel doesn't matter. That's one view. He was Mochel, but he didn't know what he was doing, and therefore it's irrelevant. The other view is, he isn't really mochel if he doesn't know. What does that mean? A couple of different explanations. One explanation is the Sma, his approach. And the Sma writes in Chav Gimel, I bolded the words, Lo yadati sheyesh bo'ona kokach ha'emcho. When he finds out how much it is, he's going to say, no, I never would have been mochel. It doesn't. You aren't really mochel if you don't know how much you're forgiving. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is conceptually, and this is the statement of the Sefer HaTrumos, everybody quotes Sefer HaTrumos, says that he's quoting the Ramban. I wasn't so clear on which part of this was the Ramban. But nonetheless, the Sefer HaTrumos says the following. I brought it for you in Chav Dalet. He says, you always know there is a possibility of Ona'ah when you enter a business deal. Each side is trying to get the best deal for themselves. But you aren't mochel. Right? You aren't mochel. That's not the way it works. If you were to assume mechila, just because somebody knows that the other guy is trying to get the better of him, there would be no law of Onah ever. If you were to assume that when the guy says to me, you know, this is actually worth more than I am, this is actually worth less than I'm charging you. If you were to assume that constituted mechila, especially Rashi's version, we don't even need to name the amount, then there would never be a law of Onah. Because that's what happens all the time in commerce. Right? You know that going in. You know you're not getting a price that's equal to what the item is worth. That's the way people do business. Now, that may be different now than it was back in the days of the Gemara, from what it was in the days of the Gemara. It could be in the days of the Gemara that's not so. Depending on how you define shar, we still haven't talked about that. But that's the statement of the Sefer HaTrumos. It's conceptual. In the event that you were to claim that without saying almanas, you already forgave it, then there would be open, we would lose Onah, basically. It can't be. It doesn't make any sense. The Nesivos brings a proof that it doesn't work if you don't have you can't say that it's mechila b'taos. He talks about a woman being mochel her suba, but I'm going to skip that. You can see it there on the sheet. Last note, even if the mis'aneh forgives, there's still an iser. The Imre Bina says this in the last source that I brought you on the sheet, which I can't see because since I installed the printer before, there's a note on my page that's blocking this part of my thing. Nonetheless, you can see the Imre Bina for yourself. He says, thank you. Umeyata b'mechila, im'einu mefarish sheyodeya shechayov lo yoser, v'sheyesh lo zechus yosim ha'shenoseh lo. If he doesn't specify, right, that he knows he owes him more, that he has a greater right, Yesh lomer d'lo mahani mechila. You could say the mechila doesn't work, as the Rashba that we saw said. Kevin shechaveru yudei shechayav lo yoser after dino na yesh lomer de'ein bo. D'lo azef mikarka v'davar shenu metalta v'gufo. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Even though there's no din of onah of refunding, there's still in iser mechila doesn't work. D'lo azef mikarka v'davar shenu metalta v'gufo. Mama diyatsim din onah. This is no different from land or other items exempt from Onah. Mikol makom iser Torah hu lehanos lechavero. There is a fundamental prohibition against being ma'ane somebody else. Bechol dvarim diyismi'itu midin Onah. With all the items that are excluded from Onah, says the Imre Bina, there is still an Isser, and he draws on the Ramban from Bahar, who split out the Isser from the obligation to refund. And so he says, even if the guy is Mochel, there is still an Isser of being Ma'aneh somebody else. I really wasn't 100% sure, because if he's Mochel, maybe he really is Mochel, and that's it. Yeah, what's there to be guilty of? That
one.
Right.
And Tosa seems to be saying, I mean, at least like a knowledge of face value, but that's not
yeah.
true. Everyone uses that sort of question.
Well, it's a question of whether it's a Mamanos issue or whether it's an Isser issue. Right. So maybe this is fitting in with that. Right. I hear that. But to make sure that we know what we've said today, we finished off the discussion of the obligation of refunding it and whether that's part of the Isser, whether it's a separate entity, or whether it's the generator of the Isser, as the Kuntres Yeshurim wanted to say, or whether all of this is just what the Chachamim were licensed to say within the law of Onah, as expressed in the Pasuk of Lo Sonu Oso. In terms of the Mis'ana's ability to claim it, we said it's because he has been cheated. However, he has the ability to be Mochel, but Mechila has to be explicit. He has to know there's Onah. According to the Rambam, he has to know how much Onah there is. And he has to say, I am forgiving my ability to claim it from you. And there may still be a prohibition involved per this Imre Bina. God willing, the next 2 weeks Shir will be by Rabbi Ziering, who will send out Myra Makomos in good time. If anyone wants to ask me a question now, I can stick around for a couple of minutes. Shkoyach.